The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Want the real story behind the sound bites and headlines? Let's find the facts. Remember, it's not a conspiracy theory if it's the truth. You are not paranoid or confused. You just need to know.
Welcome, everybody. It's time for another edition of Need to Know. Kip Kiefer with you for another week as we look at everything that's going on around our country, around the world, and societally. You know, every week you hear my voice, and if you pay attention to headlines and sound bites and everything that surrounds us in this current world, you hear a lot of other voices. I get the feeling that the more voices we hear and the more disputed the messaging is, depending on who's the messenger, maybe it would be a good idea. And I tried to think of a way to frame this to make it an interesting program. But I thought maybe if we took a step backward and listened to some voices from the past, who a lot of them that I'm going to talk about today are individuals who had a lot to say about not only their contemporary situations in their contributions to creating this unbelievable experiment called America, but also some of the really strong messaging that they delivered in some of their famous statements, quotes, speeches, presentations, writings. So bear with me today. I think this might be an enjoyable exercise in hearing from some of the most significant figures in American history and what they had to say about their times and the times ahead. So let's start with a name that you may not be that aware of. I think every single person is aware of what his famous quote, a very short one as it was, but it really is impactful. And I thought I'd tell you about a little bit of the person's history that was responsible for it. The quote is, "Give me liberty or give me death." That was made in the 1760s by a gentleman by the name of Patrick Henry. And I know a lot of you know the name Patrick Henry. I know some of you do not, because there are people that can't name their own senators from their states right now because, for whatever reason, we live in kind of an information vacuum where if it's not absolutely front and center in your current world, and I don't mean you listeners, I mean any individual, but a lot of people don't focus on a lot of the things that are surrounding them that are very pertinent. But Patrick Henry, for those who don't know who he was born in 1736 to a wealthy Virginia family, a prominent one. He was named after his uncle, who was a famous Anglican minister and supposedly a thunderous orator and speaker of all things religion. And Patrick Henry took the path of becoming a lawyer and a politician and a writer and a speech maker. And it was in the Virginia legislature in the 1760s, where Patrick Henry famously declared in the debate of whether Virginia was going to turn its back on the crown and join the, quote, rebellion of the states that were starting to form the seeds of what would become the United States of America. There were a lot of loyalists in Virginia, a lot of the original settlers that came over from Europe, predominantly England, settled in Virginia. So it was a hot topic of whether or not Virginia was going to jump ship and go forward with this new enterprise, this new idea that became America. And Patrick Henry, basically tired, just like the other colonists, of the tyranny from the throne of England, who was in financial difficulty at the time because they were fighting wars on multiple different fronts. They'd had the never-ending French war that had gone on for 100 years and always would flare up and cause great distress, of course, to the pocketbooks of the British. The king kept imposing more taxes and more restrictions on Americans. And these are people that have fled the model at the time of Europe in pursuit of more control of their own destiny, not to be so much under the thumb and rule of a monarch, a king. And it really was a powder keg that was going to explode at some point as the king imposed more and more conditions on life in the new world of America. So Patrick Henry famously declared after a long speech, the words, of course, that live on forever, "Give me liberty or give me death." Now, you know, again, framing that up, it's pretty simple what he was saying, that life underneath the rule of another person who is basically dictating to you what you can do and where your revenue has to go and you know, what you can say and believe is not really life worth living. So you can't get more dramatic than "give me liberty or give me death." And I think it's a great place to start in this discussion. Let's move on to another major figure in all of that revolutionary time, and that was Thomas Jefferson, who amazingly, such a brilliant, scholarly individual who is mired in controversy today. There are people that are disgusted that the Jefferson Memorial exists in Washington, that have had statues removed or torn down because Jefferson was a slave owner. Well, Jefferson's family had a major farming situation in Virginia once again, and Jefferson himself never was really comfortable with slavery. In fact, famously, he had a long-standing affair with a former slave in his resume. So clearly, not really a racist individual, and I think it speaks a lot of volumes to the times we live in, where we try to apply modern-day theory and perspective to something that was going on now approaching 300 years ago. It was different times, and I don't think it was so much racism that was driving slavery. It was an economic engine. It was a justification for a wicked and absolutely abhorrent institution, which slavery is and has always been throughout the history of the world. You know, remember, I think it's important to emphasize, America did not invent slavery. Slavery has been around since ancient Egypt, all of the Roman and Greek societies, and also, of course, in Africa itself, as the more developed nations enlisted and captured people from tribal situations that were not as evolved and forced them into labor. So this has been something that has gone on for a long time. So to suggest Thomas Jefferson was somehow a, you know, racist and should be spurned now and canceled in the modern day vernacular is pretty ridiculous. Jefferson even famously said about slavery, because the only reason that people like Jefferson allowed slavery to not be abolished initially in the original U.S. Constitution is because it was such a fragile situation with slave states and the northern states that were in favor of getting rid of it, realizing how terrible the institution was and how unsustainable and really how hypocritical it was in a situation where the premise of the country is all men are created equal, to have people in bondage, absolutely, you know, indefensible. But Jefferson said, you know, it's either put this country together or have it just be a bunch of fragile individual states that will have very little chance of sustainability in the long term. they recognized that at the time, to insist that slavery be abolished was a deal killer. And as abominable as that is, the conclusion as to the long-term health of not only the free Americans at the time, but with the of absolute assuredness that slavery would be abolished fairly quickly. And I think the founders would have been shocked that it took another 80 years for it to happen. But that was inevitable. It wasn't going to stand for long. And to keep the nation together at that time, that was a compromise that they had to grudgingly agree to. Jefferson said of slavery, it's like holding a rabid wolf by its ears. You don't like it at all, but you don't dare let it go. And I think that was an interesting quote from Jefferson, of course, who is a veritable quote machine, being the primary author of many of America's most important documents, chiefly the Declaration of Independence, where, of course, he wrote some of his most famous words, that we hold it self-evident that all men are created equal, endowed by the same Creator, and born with certain unalienable rights for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Excuse me. Those words are so defining on what America is intended to be. It's a land of opportunity. It's a land where you should be free to pursue what makes you happy and what fulfills your life and gives you the liberty to do so. So, of course, that was Jefferson's words. I also like a couple of not-so-famous Jefferson quotes. This one really kind of rings true in these times, where Jefferson wrote, "Honesty is the first chapter in the book of wisdom." Now, think about that a little bit, because we live in such a disingenuous time now where to fulfill an agenda, telling the truth is a lost art. Our president now, while campaigning in before the 2020 election at the Iowa State Fair, and if you want to look it up on YouTube, it's there front and center, he absolutely declared that we believe in truth, not facts. Okay, truth is based, look up the definition of truth. Truth is based on fact. That is what truth is. Truth is not what your agenda is and what you shape your beliefs to fit what you want to accomplish. Truth is fact-based, and that's what Jefferson was saying. Honesty is the first chapter in the book of wisdom. I think that was a really compelling thing to consider in these times. And, you know, Jefferson, too, had another one that I really like, and it was a short one. A man with courage is a majority. Think about that a little bit, too, that if you stand on your principles and you move forward fearlessly on what you believe and you express those thoughts and you believe them with all of your heart and soul, that you are a majority on your own, because so many people just can't step up. And especially in these times where people that have any other alternate belief to what they're now being force-fed to espouse, you can be ridiculed and rejected and even canceled now for holding beliefs that, again, are based on fact and therefore are the truth. So Jefferson, a major contributor to this discussion. Other people that I think had words of wisdom that we can really hearken back to today. Of course, Abraham Lincoln. You can't have this discussion without old Abe. Of course, Lincoln came from the most humble of circumstances to ascend to the presidency, and wrote probably the most compelling, famous document in American history, the Gettysburg Address. And, you know, amazingly, the Gettysburg Address almost never occurred by Abraham Lincoln. Of course, it happened in November of 1863, the Battle of Gettysburg, which was absolutely the most pivotal conflict in the war. Robert E. Lee had decided to seize the initiative and invade the North. The idea was to go up through Pennsylvania and be able to get in the across the Potomac River into Washington, the Susquehanna, and get into Maryland and into Washington, D.C., and force with the a siege of Washington, terms to be negotiated for the Confederacy to be recognized as its own nation. But Lee and the Federal Army, which at that time was not under the control of Ulysses S. Grant. He didn't come into the picture till later on. Ulysses S. Grant, that very weekend, the first week of July in 1863, he had his hands full in Vicksburg as he had, was concluding a 90-day siege of the most important stop on the Mississippi River and the last link to total control by the North. Ulysses S. Grant closed the deal by finally starving the city of Vicksburg into submission, and that was the end of that conflict. So Grant was not at Gettysburg, like a lot of people believe. It was not always Lee versus Grant, but Grant's sensational victory and strategic mastery in capturing a basically impregnable position that the Confederates held, a stronghold, if you will, on the Mississippi River, earned Grant the summons to Washington and ultimately the promotion to Major General of all of the Union forces, one of the only people to ever get the Lieutenant General designation in American history. So it was not going on at that time under his command. It was George Meade. Lincoln had gone through a whole series of commanders, and all of them worse than the one before, starting with Little Mac, who would run against him for president in 1864, and going to Ambrose Burnside and Joseph Hooker, and just a whole series of guys that didn't get the job done. But Meade was the commander at Gettysburg. And of course, that conflict was unbelievably bloody for 3 days, just savage, you know, duels for control. The Union in this case actually occupied the hills, the higher ground, and that really led to the key to victory for the Union Army. And Lee's army retreated in defeat, depleted by about a third of its manpower after that 3 day campaign. But Lincoln was invited to come to Gettysburg not until about the first week of October. And back in those days, that wasn't much notice for just about a month, because a lot of arrangements and travel, of course, was not as expedient as it is today. But Lincoln was invited after much debate by the organizers of the big memorial service. And give the people of Gettysburg credit, they were left with a terrible situation on their hands, with thousands of dead and wounded soldiers that they had to deal with this small little town. And hurriedly, they built a fabulous cemetery intern the people that lost their lives on the Union side, and designated each area of the cemetery by state, and buried all the soldiers in the various militias from their states together. And this was the ceremony to, dedicate that particular resting place for all of these fallen soldiers. I think it's amazing to this day that you hear people talking about, you know, the racism and all of the reparations that are owed to people that were enslaved. And certainly there's a lot of logical debate on those topics. But I think it's amazing to me that over 400,000 Union soldiers died fighting to make other men free, and really don't get any credit for that sacrifice, because That's what turned the table, allowed Lincoln to issue the Emancipation Proclamation to free the slaves, and also led to the 13th Amendment being adopted shortly before his assassination in a brutal fight in Congress where the Democrat Party, yes, you heard that right, the Democrat Party fought tooth and nail to try to keep the African Americans who were newly freed from achieving full citizenship. The Republican Party was front and center leading that debate, and Abraham Lincoln behind the scenes pulled all the right strings. Watch the Spielberg movie Lincoln sometime. It is fascinating to see how Congress operated and the Senate, particularly back in those days. But Lincoln really got that done as a major result. But without winning that war, that was never going to happen. So that sacrifice for all those soldiers. And think about the words in the Gettysburg Address. 67 years ago, our forefathers embarked on this continent, a new nation conceived in liberty and based on the principle that all men are created equal. Right back to the Jeffersonian language. And of course, it concludes with language that I think we really need to think about now as we tiptoe toward the territory of actually losing what we built in all of this struggle and all of this ambition of this globalization, this attempt to socialize our country. It goes against everything we're founded on, because Lincoln at the end, of course, said that these men can't die in vain. We need to move forward with malice for none and charity for all. That this sacrifice on this consecrated ground will lead to a new birth of freedom and a nation of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from this earth. If you can't come up with anything, if you can come up with anything more profound than that, I challenge you to do so, because those words will ring throughout the ages as the most prominent maybe of all time. We're running short on time here. I've gotten a little wordy, as I'm sure many of you have gotten used to, but I want to mention Frederick Douglass, because he's an American hero that's largely, I think, unappreciated. This was a mixed race gentleman born into slavery, apparently strong, and they never really were there to trace his mother down because he was separated as an infant. But his father was an African-American slave. His mother apparently was a American Indian. Don't know what the tribal affiliation, but he was born on the eastern shore of Maryland and was immediately, because Maryland was a slave state, a lot of folks don't realize that either, although they never officially seceded from the Union. Frederick Douglass ended up being kind of a houseboy for a prominent family in the early parts of his life, and the lady of the house took a liking to him in terms of recognizing that he had a tremendous amount of intellect and ability, and she started to educate him and teach him how to read and write and all of and a love of literature. And when he got to be almost teenage years, her husband told her to stop the education process, because he would soon be returning to manual labor in a plantation setting. And that, in this man's words, education is a key to an individual seeking their freedom. And at that time, once again, the concept of African-American young men having their freedom, or all African-Americans at that time that were in the terrible, abhorrent institution of slavery, there was a purposeful turning away from trying to educate these folks, because they thought that would be a flame to want to be free. Frederick Douglass, that flame was already lit on his own throughout his teenage years. He continued to pore over any bit of reading material he could get his hands on. And as a 17 or 18 year old, he actually broke away one night, waded across the river, and got to free soil in Pennsylvania, and famously said, standing on that bank, looking back across the bay that I had just swam across, and realizing that the soil I was standing on now was for freemen, and where I could still see my birthplace was a slave place that freedom was not permitted. That's pretty powerful stuff when you consider that just breaking away and still being able to see the landmass where your circumstances are completely different is pretty astounding to think that that existed. But Frederick Douglass, in so many of his writings and three different autobiographies, described his whole experience. And I think it's important, back to the same theme we've been talking about. He famously wrote that any nation, and this nation in particular, with the great experiment of representative democracy, that it will never be secure unless the government and the leadership of said nation relies on truthfulness, honesty, and virtue. And again, right now, all of those things are under assault. Frederick Douglass had a very good perspective indeed on those particular subjects, and is really an amazing figure to rise to the point of being one of the great orators of the mid-1800s during the Civil War. He had at least three meetings with Abraham Lincoln, and wouldn't you like to have been in that room to hear those? Because he understood the political position Lincoln was in and had how he had to maneuver his way to achieve a lot of the goals that he had. But Douglass was a fiery leader and became celebrated by all the intellectuals in the country who were fighting for rights and freedoms of all of our citizens. I got to jump ahead here because we're running short on time. John F. Kennedy, of course, 1960, youngest president ever elected at 43 years old, had so many famous things to say. But I liked in the 1960s, and this is a Democrat at the time, who had very modern day conservative views. He famously said, "Let me inform you whether you are a fan of this country or wish it ill will, that we will go to any measure, we will pay any price, we will bear any burden, and we will endure any hardship to ensure the preservation of freedom and liberty." And again, I think John Kennedy and a lot of these voices we're talking about from the past would be appalled to see the direction we're going right now, where you don't have freedom of speech, your liberties are being taken away by insanely driven high inflation, now calls for even greater taxation, threats that a lot of our counted on entitlement programs are going bankrupt. We are going in the wrong direction, folks. And these people, more than any, will be appalled. Of course, Kennedy also had the famous call to arms. His probably most notable speech was his inauguration in 1960 in the freezing down around zero wind chill, where he stood out and said, "Ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country." There was still that spirit of patriotism and everybody's shoulder to the wheel in America, and we've got to get back to that if we're going to survive and thrive in the future. And finally, Martin Luther King, the greatest orator, in my opinion, in the history of this country, and his most prominent speech, of course, in Washington on the reflecting pool in front of, appropriately, the Lincoln Memorial, where he, in that famous speech on the March on Washington, said he has dreams that his children will one day live in a country where a person is judged not by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. And I mean, think about logically how much sense that makes. Why do we look at a person and say, "Oh, they're black, they're Asian, they're Mexican, they're fat, they're ugly, they're, you know, tattooed, they're, you know, white trash, they're whatever." Why do we make judgments of people based on what they look like? It's all about who people are. And anybody who can't see that I just feel sorry for them because, you know, you the old really silly cliche, you can't judge a book by its cover, is so true, because people have to be judged on who they are and what they believe and what they stand for and what their spirituality is. And Martin Luther King, that profound statement rings the truest for what this country's all about, and are words that everybody should say to themselves every day as they go out in the world. And I'm going to finish with the great communicator, Ronald Reagan. When Ronald Reagan said that people look to government for solution to their problems, they need to realize government is the problem. And of course, the all-time quote in terms of what's happening now and what Reagan was warning us against 40 years ago, America is a country with a government. It can never be the other way around. And there's a lot of folks right now pulling the levers and pushing the buttons, trying to make that happen. A giant federal government, centralized, all controlling of education, of economy, of, you know, people in office, of voting situations. This is what's happening here. We are in the transition of becoming a government that has a country, and that is not the way it needs to be and not the way it can possibly stand. That's all the time we have for this week. I hope you enjoyed some of the flashback to some of the great voices of the past, because I think so much of what they had to say and what they believe is pertinent to the discussion today to get this country back on track. I'm Kip Kiefer. Don't miss tomorrow's. We're going to be recording this week's Kiefer and Curry, talking about the phenomenon and the mystery and mastery that is the NCAA basketball tournament. There's so many fascinating components to that. And Tony and I will have that for you coming up. It's Must Hear Radio, Must Hear Broadcasting right here on TKR. And we hope you will join us. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to Need to Know. Hope you enjoyed the show as much as I enjoyed bringing it to you.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.